You're listening to The Takeaway.
It's time to take a look at the scorecard for the week, the winners, the losers, and those who'd like to do the week over. We have President Obama selling his embattled health care plan, Secretary of State Clinton taking aim at North Korea, and a Harvard professor and PBS star facing down the police from inside his own home. Here to help us with this week's tally, we have our friends Marcus Mabry, international business editor at The New York Times, and Ryan Salam. He is a fellow at the New America Foundation, and co-author of Brand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Marcus, let's start with health care. This week, you couldn't turn on a television set without seeing President Obama making his pitch.
The cost of our health care has weighed down our economy and our conscience long enough.
Inaction is no longer an option. The choice to defer reform is nothing more than a decision to defend the status quo, and I will not defend the status quo. We are going to change health care reform.
Wow, that's so stirring. And then, of course, the other noise that we heard about the health care debate was Harry Reid saying, not going to happen before the recess. So where does that leave us?
Well, it's not over yet. It's interesting that the change in tone of the president between the beginning of the week and the end of the week,
it's quite stark.
Absolutely. At the beginning, you're saying, well, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. And now we have him saying, well, you know, it's worth waiting if we can get a consensus bill. And that's the way he originally, of course, launched his politics, was about consensus. But he said this was such an important reform, it must happen quickly. It's not over by far. Harry Reid also told the White House that they're going to come back and they will have a bipartisan from the Senate Finance Committee bill proposal, the first bipartisan proposal we've seen, but before they actually adjourn on August 8th. That's what Harry Reid said. That's a positive, if it is true.
Okay, Raihan, do you see a clear winner or loser this week?
That is a very hard question to answer. I think that President Obama is scrambling. So in that sense, I think he's a loser. But I don't think that, again, as Marcus pointed out, I don't think the fight is over. So he may have lost this week. He may have lost the battle, but he certainly hasn't lost the war. I think that he's done an incredibly good job of expressing the idea of urgency, of the need for healthcare reform, and he's dazzlingly articulate in describing exactly what's gone wrong. At the same time, I don't think that the public connects his solutions to what he describes as the crisis itself, and I think that's a big problem.
I know that he has said he'd rather focus on policy than politics, but if you're looking at this in a purely political framework, it's a loss this week for the president. Ryan? Marcus, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
And Marcus?
It's definitely excellent for the Republicans. Right now, the Republicans don't have to do anything other than kind of let the train wreck happen as the Democrats negotiate with the Democrats.
The other story that dominated the news this week, of course, was the arrest of African-American scholar Henry Louis Gates outside his home in Cambridge. Yesterday, the Cambridge police held a press conference to defend themselves after President Obama said that the police had acted stupidly.
I believe that Sergeant Crowley acted in a way that is consistent with his training at the department and consistent with national standards of law enforcement protocol. I do not believe his actions in any way were racially motivated.
How much did the presidential commentary give further life to the story? We're still talking about race. We're having this stimulating race conversation. So I'm wondering, given the work that he's done, does this mean that in the end, Professor Gates is a winner? Marcus?
Well, it depends on how you look at
it. Now, there's a construction for you, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think Skip Gates himself would have a hard time seeing himself as a winner because as he and the Cambridge police originally said when the Cambridge police dropped the charges against him, judging these charges themselves of disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace as unwarranted, they also issued a statement jointly with him saying it was an unfortunate and regrettable incident. That's what they said on Tuesday. Now we've gotten to the point where it's true because of the president's remark. It's kind of given new life to the issue. But Skip Gates wasn't going to let it go in the first place because he said he wanted to use this issue that someone as famous as him, as little as him, who's been, you know, now it's kind of portrayed as this threat, and he's a little guy, 5'7" or so, probably 150 pounds, soaking wet. and you know, the kind of quintessential archetype of a professor could be used as, or seen as, a kind of a threat by a police officer and arrested in his own home. Look, every African American male, and I'm an African American male, this is something we live with every day, a fear that, and I've been stopped with my partner, who's a white male, by police, just kind of in regular traffic stops and stuff, and I'm the one always saying, you know, sir, yes sir, yes sir, yes sir, and being incredibly deferential, because the fear is they have the power, and it's usually a white policeman, and if they want to do something untoward, if you offend them, and that's what Skip Gates did, by accusing him of racism, Skip Gates offended this officer. This officer used his power then to arrest Skip Gates.
Yeah, and this is for Rai Chidea. Raihan, again, you know, Raihan Salam, fellow at New America Foundation, there is now the whole police record is public, and Skip Gates did say to the officers, basically the phrase he used, "Why? Because I'm a black man in America." That was his sort of punch kicker line when, you know, he was saying, "I don't want to leave my home in handcuffs." Isn't that a fair thing to say? I mean, should that get you arrested, you know, does that make you a provocateur? What do you think?
Well, absolutely not. I think that in itself, but I think at the same time, the dynamics of these situations are always incredibly difficult. I mean, the job of a police officer is just one where you're confronted with all kinds of dilemmas constantly. You're interpreting information that's coming at you very quickly, and sometimes it's hard to decide exactly what you're going to do. My gut instinct is that Skip Gates has every right to be really upset, and I think, you know, when watching the president's statement, it's hard not to empathize with it. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's how a lot of us feel about encounters with the police. At the same time, I also think that, you know, as the president, Obama has done an excellent job of trying to get himself out of the fray and give a more kind of global bird's eye view of a situation. That's one of his great talents. And that's why I was surprised. And a lot of people have talked about how, you know, he was a little tired, or it was a very gut level, very sincere response. But it's a situation where, you know, for example, when he was talking about Iran and the protesters there, he didn't give his gut level sincere response, because he recognized that as president, you have to exercise some caution and you have to step back and speak on behalf of the country.
Let me just say quickly, Ryan, that, you know, the president told ABC, from what I can tell, the sergeant involved is an outstanding police officer. And, you know, this officer gave CPR to Reggie Lewis, the dying basketball star, and he's, you know, cites that as, you know, well, you know, basically implicit. If I give CPR to a black guy, I can't be a racist. But I'm going to wrap this up and toss it back to Catherine.
You know, there was another conversation that's been going on that has been some fiery give and take, and that's Hillary Clinton on her trip to Asia. Let's listen to what she had to say about North Korea.
Well, what we've seen is this constant demand for attention, and maybe it's the mother in me or the experience that I've had with small children and unruly teenagers and people who are demanding attention. Don't give it to them. They don't deserve it.
Okay, now is that the Secretary of State flexing her muscle? Are we going to have any real outcome from this particular exchange? We should point out, of course, that North Korea then went on to lobby some remarks back at her.
Criticize the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pantsuit.
Something like that. Ryan, let's go to you.
I thought it was dazzling. I thought it was fantastic. I think that she is incredibly tart, and I think that North Korea deserved it. And I think that, you know, the worry is, oh, you know, these guys need to be handled very gingerly. Oh, you know, they let's not ruffle their feathers. And I think that, you know, she said what is on everyone's mind. And I think that, you know, at a certain level, they don't deserve to be taken seriously. Yes, they have, you know, they're brimming with weapons, and there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty. But I also think that she should hardly be blamed for the fact that they're, you know, unstable lunatics. And I thought that it was fantastic, so I applaud her for it.
Marcus?
Well, I think she was trying to underline the fact that there's a consensus now that was never there before, including on the part of the Chinese, North Korea's closest allies, if they have any allies at all at this point. She was saying they have no allies left, no friends. But the important part of it, I think, is that she also really expressed a hard line saying we're not going to go back to just negotiations for the sake of negotiations. And that's something that, ironically, the Obama administration is now looking as hawkish as the Bush administration was when it first came in. Because at the end of the Bush administration, they were actually negotiating. There was a framework set up of talks, six-party talks, that didn't lead to – it led to an agreement the North Koreans then backed out on. So it's interesting that in this respect, the Obama administration is actually tougher and more hawkish than their Republican predecessors.
Okay. I want to thank both of you for stopping by. Marcus Mabry, New York Times International Business Editor. Good to have you here. And Raihan Salam, fellow at the New America Foundation. Thank you as well. And don't forget the big winner this week that was easy, the Dow Jones. We'll be talking about that a little later.